to Upstate's Health Link on Air. Linda Cohen along with you. Well, it's been said that music hath charms to soothe the savage breast and to find its way into the inward places of the soul. It's been known for some time that music can heal. And joining us this morning to help us understand just how music is being used today to do just that is Claire Arizina, a board-certified music therapist at Upstate's Golisano Children's Hospital. Welcome, Claire. Thanks Hi. For coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
So I understand you're the only music therapist in a hospital here in Syracuse.
Right now, that is the case, yes.
That's interesting.
It is.
Given the fact that as we explore this, it's quite a useful modality to help people heal.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So tell us about it. I mean, I think most of us can relate to the fact that music is can really touch us. But help us understand just exactly what is music therapy.
Sure. Music therapy is, there's a clinical term for you. It's the clinical evidence-based use of music to help individuals meet physical, behavioral, psychological, and social needs. Music therapy is an established healthcare profession, and we can help individuals of all ages to improve functional abilities as well as quality of life.
So it's not just sitting around listening to music.
No, absolutely not.
And it requires a lot of training. We'll talk more about, you know, some of the requirements that you've had to go through
sure.
to become board certified
right.
As a music therapist. But exactly in your own words, what is the goal then when you meet a patient? What is the goal? Well, obviously, it must vary. So
right.
why don't you help us understand what you do
Absolutely.
When you're called into a
Absolutely.
Case?
Absolutely. So basically, when I walk into a room in a hospital setting, my job is to assess on the spot what the patient needs in that moment. So not only in that moment, but in their hospital journey as a whole. So I may see a pediatric patient with cancer who will be in the hospital for some length of time. That day, they may be able to engage in playing instruments with me. They may be able to work on learning some relaxation techniques that they can use on their own later. Or it may be a really rotten day. And all that they're able to do and to engage with me is to listen while I sing for them or while I sing with their family. And that assessment piece is what's so important about music therapy, is being able to look at a patient or a client and say, okay, this is what they need in that moment, and this is how I can accomplish it through music for them.
It's really not unlike, I'd say, any diagnostic procedure. You're
sure.
really diagnosing the needs and then figuring out the treatment
exactly.
modality.
Exactly.
But help us understand then, who are the kinds of patients you might be called in to help?
Sure. Well, with one of me in a 70-plus bed facility, I obviously can't see every patient, unfortunately, but I have a hierarchy that I go through. And based on the research, we know that some patients are less likely to cope well with hospitalization. So younger children, children who don't have family support, children who have chronic diagnoses and have had to undergo repeated hospitalizations, children with developmental delays, all those sorts of things. I know from the research that these children are less likely to cope well.
So people perhaps like you said, developmental mm-hmm. problems of some kind.
Sure.
Yep. Maybe autism spectrum disorder,
yep.
people who have pain management issues.
Exactly. Exactly. And I also kind of keep my ear to the ground to hear, okay, this teenager who we would expect to be coping well with his hospitalization isn't for whatever reason. They're having a lot of anxiety around a needle stick. They're having a lot of anxiety around, you know, whatever it is that they have to go through when they're hospitalized. And again, collaborating with the whole psychosocial team, I can kind of pick up on those things and then, again, prioritize that patient higher because I know of this specific scenario that they're going through that they need help
so
with.
So it sounds to me somewhat that it seems like the driving force in your mind at this point in a hospital setting, because
sure.
I know music therapy can be applied elsewhere, and I'd like to mention that in a
right.
minute, but in your current setting in a children's hospital, a lot of it is palliative, meaning it's comfort and it's soothing and it's a way of helping the child learn to perhaps self-soothe.
Yeah, exactly.
Or cope.
Exactly. I work a lot with coping. I'm also dual certified as a child life specialist and I'm hired as part of the child life department. So my focus as a music therapist, I have that child life perspective on it, which is again coping with hospitalization, normalizing the hospital environment and helping the whole family to cope with hospitalization.
So give me an example. Let's say you had a child who's in the hospital for a period of chemotherapy.
Sure.
And obviously they must vary with their distress level.
Right.
During that entire stay. Right. How would you approach that problem?
Absolutely. Especially for kids with chronic illness, the goal eventually is for them to be able to cope on their own. Because all the support in the world can't really help them long term if they're not able to find ways to cope themselves.
To soothe themselves.
Exactly. And so that is part of my role as a music therapist and the Child Life team, is to give families and kids the skills that they need over time to be able to self-soothe. However, in an acute sort of case, I can help in those times when it's just too hard to do it on their own and they're not ready to do it yet. So when kids are undergoing, a round of chemotherapy and they just feel gross. They feel like crap. I can go in and play them music that's familiar to them and kind of help them get their breathing under control without addressing it in a direct way. And without them having to think about it and having to, use the cognitive energy to try and do it on their own. I'm sort of there to help them with that.
And then you said, obviously, if the long-term goal, really for any of us, I would think, is to learn how to self-soothe.
Right.
What are some of those skills that you teach, or how do you go about doing that?
Sure. So if I'm seeing a patient long-term, if we have an acute day, I'll try to have a non-acute day very close to that, again, for the chronic kids, so that we can. Do you remember the other day when this happened and I helped you do that with music? Let's come up with some strategies for you to be able to do that when you're home, when you have to come to clinic and I can't be there, when you,
So give me an example. When you're talking about, what are the things that you're trying to help them learn to do? To breathe more
deeply. Yeah. I do a lot of deep breathing. We do some guided imagery if it's appropriate for the child.
And is that with music?
It can be. I sort of assess where the child is and what they're ready for. For some kids, listening to music is very helpful during that. For others, it's just too much, and they can't go there. Because I think we've all had the experience of listening to music and just bursting into tears. So again, I try and assess where the child and the family are in their process and give them enough to help them, but not so much that it's...
I think most of us, most of our listeners, and I certainly have had the experience where music can be very powerful, as you just alluded to.
Absolutely.
To stimulate thought or emotion or to calm us or to even agitate us.
Right.
So I guess the next question seems obvious to me is, what kind of music do you utilize? Is there a kind of music? Is there a universal kind, or is it vary with the patient? In other words, you might have one who's listening to hip hop, and then you have one who's listening to Bach.
Yeah, again, what we know from the research is that patient-preferred music is absolutely the best. And it makes sense. We all have our preferences. People like spicy food. Other people can't stand spicy food. So my goal a lot of the time is to do whatever feels best for the patient. So if they listen to hip-hop at home, I'm not all of a sudden going to turn them into a Mozart listener, because that's, quote-unquote, what's indicated. What's indicated is what they like and what feels good in their body naturally to them. So from there are obviously pieces that are more agitating because of the rhythm, because of the tempo, because of the volume, and kind of helping patients to make choices that are more mellow if they need to be more mellow in that moment. And a lot of what I do, particularly with very young children, is I'll do some arpeggiated guitar and work on the entrainment, which is getting the body to sort of slow down and lock into the rhythm of music. And slow down.
Let's explain that a little bit
more,
because I first heard that term many, many years ago, entrainment.
Yes.
When listening to a lecturer talking about, I think, Enya's music.
Yes.
Or some other people. And Enya does this very kind of rhythmic, measured, soulful kind of music,
yes.
Irish music,
yep.
That, from my understanding, actually reflects the heartbeat.
Yes.
All of our heartbeats at a rest, in a restful position.
Right.
And so is that the goal, to try to get people to kind of entrain with the music, so to speak?
It can be, if that's what they need. If I'm in a setting where I see that a child is very agitated, or even a parent is very agitated, I might again, using my training and what I know about music and what it, how it interacts with the brain and how it interacts with, you know, the biological mechanisms, to sort of start at one tempo and gradually slow them down. And the really cool thing about our bodies is that the way that music is processed in the brain, that can happen.
It's really just powerful.
Cool. It's just cool.
It really can slow you down.
Absolutely.
And also, contrarily, it can jazz you up.
Absolutely. Yep.
So you need someone who really understands both the benefits of both, I guess,
precisely,
at certain times.
Precisely.
So tell me some, how did you decide to become a music therapist?
It's a great question. I was in middle school, and I started volunteering at a camp for kids and adults with developmental delays. And so all through middle school and early high school, I was thinking I wanted to be a special education teacher. So then one day, I think around my junior year of high school, a music therapist came to camp, and she did a session, with, you know, a very informal session with the camp. And it was just the change that I saw in a lot of these kids and adults was just phenomenal.
Profound.
I mean, exactly. I mean, these kids can interact with art projects. You know, they're very happy to be on a swing, but they're not really interacting with you, you know, more than you're the person who's pushing them. But there's not a real connection there. But just the way that some of these kids opened up to being in music, both with the music therapist and with other people in the group, was really powerful to me. And it was like all of the band and choir and piano lessons and everything that I had done all of a sudden made sense.
So you had done a lot of music
in
your background.
Yep. Music was in my house from the get-go. My parents met singing in a choir.
Oh, how
so
lovely.
Yeah.
So was singing your main instrument? Was your voice your instrument?
It is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can't tell this morning. Allergies are kind of rough. But yeah.
That's great. Yeah. But you also mentioned that you play an instrument as well.
Yes. Yes. Again, as part of training as a music therapist, you not only have to sing reasonably well, but you also have to be able to accompany yourself on at least two what they call social instruments. So mine were guitar and piano. Some music therapists use auto harp. And I'm sure there are others that are possible, but my two primary are guitar and keyboard.
And how long of training was it for you?
It's a 4-year bachelor's degree. Plus a 1,000-hour internship afterwards.
So basically, as an undergraduate, you can pursue a music therapy career.
Correct. Correct.
Okay. Yep. That's good for people to know.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Then you do a 1,000-hour internship,
mm-hmm,
where you're supervised and you get
exactly
accreditation.
Exactly.
Do you have to take a lot of exams?
There's one board certification exam at the end that you sit for. And
so you use this also in this. There's a really fancy multisensory room at Golisano.
There is, yes.
And you can use your techniques in that environment as
absolutely,
well, I would
yes
imagine.
Yeah.
Tell me, do you think that, give me, in the little bit of time we have left, give me an example of a story or some kind of a success story you can share with our
sure
listeners.
It happens a lot with toddlers, actually, and it's sort of interesting that, especially when they've had to have a lot of what we call pokes. So if, you know, they just can't get an IV started, or we need to get blood on this child, or whatever they need to go through, a lot of times what we see in very young children is that they don't really have a way to talk about that, because they don't have the words for it. So what I'll do a lot of the time is we'll get an instrument in there, and they'll be able to play out what they're feeling. So the nurses see me coming with my drum, and I'd make a joke that we have to close the door so that we can make as much noise as we want.
Right.
But a lot of the time, then a verbalization will come after the drumming. Like, a kid will just look at me and go, I got a big owie. And it's just, it's really powerful for me in those moments to know that that might not have happened otherwise without the music to sort of help them get there.
Well, Claire, as Arizina, music therapist, board certified music therapist at Upstate's Golisano Children's Hospital, thanks so much for coming in today. Please stay with us. I'm Linda Cohen, and we'll be right back with more HealthLink on Air right after this short break.